This is Scotty Reed with Black Talk Radio News with another news report for you. We have on the phone with us Cindy Samantha, who is with the organization IWOC, which represents incarcerated workers in the United States or perhaps globally. But we are going to welcome her onto the line. Ms. Samantha, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me and for having us today.
We are speaking to you on occasion of an upcoming fundraiser for the young men who have been dubbed the Bronx 120, who were the target of a massive NYPD raid where they were also assisted by federal authorities. But before we talk about that specific upcoming fundraising event, can you tell us a little more about your work and the work of IWOC?
I'm very happy to. So we're an organization that started nationally about 2.5 years ago when the Free Alabama Movement, who some of your listeners may know about, which is an inside prison organization in Alabama made up of incarcerated people, reached out because they wanted representation from a union. And, of course, all of the traditional unions, AFL-CIO unions, FBIU, refused to engage with prisoners and are, in fact, bound by legality and the NLRB to not work with prisoners. IWOC is a project of the Industrial Workers of the World, which has historically unionized all workers, black workers, immigrant workers, women workers, at a time when many other unions would not organize with them. So we started about 2014, and in New York, we started about a year ago. And since then, we've been working with incarcerated radicals and revolutionaries all over the state, in state facilities, in county facilities, and also federal facilities that are in New York. And in April of this year, we came in contact with people who faced the gang raids, as you mentioned, the horrific kidnapping of their children and invasion of their homes in late April of 2016. And since then, we've been working with both the young men who are incarcerated in the federal prison in Brooklyn and Manhattan, and also with the family members to support them in whatever ways we can.
I would like if you can provide an update on the historic prison labor strike, where many of these prisoners across the nation participated in work stoppages in protest of what many of them call 21st century slavery and human trafficking by way of the 13th Amendment. The mainstream media has ignored this historic event. Do you know if it is still ongoing? Because information is hard to come by. So have you heard anything about the strike? Is it still ongoing? What's happening there?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. As far as we know, there are no more continuous strike actions ongoing since September 9th. Although, as you said, it's very hard to get information, especially about any kind of activity, any kind of collective action out of the prison. What we do know is that there are people who organized the work stoppages at that time who are still being retaliated against and have been retaliated against both for that action and for ongoing action.
In what ways, if I may ask, what ways are they reporting the retaliation is taking the form of?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, in the most horrific ways that one can imagine, solitary confinement, of course, being the baseline that most every organizer will get at some point. But then we've also heard reports of corrections officers physically beating up prisoners who have been active, making threats, you know, taking away personal property. There's been a lot of transfer of prisoners who have been active to facilities where they don't know anyone, that might be further from their families, and definitely, again, just a lot of physical force and literally beating up on prisoners from corrections officers is what we've heard about.
Other than grassroots, and I mean that term in a good way, but grassroots organizations, I know the IWOC has been involved in a couple of other. I know I'm part of the New Abolitionist Movement, and we have been supporting it. But these traditional, quote-unquote, civil rights organizations, I can think of the NAACP, Legal Defense Fund. I could think of SPLC. I could think of a number of mainstream organizations that put out there that they're for people's civil rights and constitutional rights. But have you seen or heard of any support coming from that sector, for the prisoners?
Touch and go. We did have support from the National Lawyers Guild nationally. They did endorse the strike. You know, I'm not a member of that organization, and I'm not an attorney. From what I understand, there was some debate within the organization about the level of involvement, although there certainly have been individual attorneys from the NLG who have been supportive and stepped up when prisoners have needed legal support. Nationally, it's possible that there's other organizations that have been involved that I'm not aware of. Locally in New York, beyond the NLG, the National Lawyers Guild, we have had some support from, we've had some meetings with the NYCLU, the New York branch of the ACLU, although from what we've been told by them, they're limited, you know, in their capacity to actually take action around some of our friends and family members who have been retaliated against in prison. So it's been definitely hard for us to get more concrete support from the more mainstream institutions.
Okay. Now let's move specifically to the event that's coming up to free the Bronx 120. Just give the listeners a brief overview of that case. We talked about it a little bit at the beginning, but how did they come to be in this position and finding themselves needing the help of the public?
Sure. Well, sadly, the simple answer is that they're young black, mostly black and brown men, mostly black of Caribbean descent, living in a poor and working class area of New York City. And in this time in the city, that is enough, it seems like, to be, involved in the carceral system. So specifically in this case, a lot of these young men, and there were some women, young women as well, grew up in a public housing project, knew one another, you know, went to elementary school together, and there was alleged gang activity taking place in and around this housing project. And the NYPD, as I'm sure you and a lot of your listeners know, have been on a crusade for quite a while to clean out and clear out these areas of, you know, poor and working class people in order to gentrify them. And if you look at the map of where these raids have happened, these so-called gang raids have happened, they've been all in places where you can see developers would love to get their hands on. So there was alleged gang activity, and it got turned into or shaped into a RICO case. RICO is an act that was developed really to catch mob bosses. So to be able to say, even if you weren't directly someone who was involved in drug dealing or murder or something, that you could still be brought up on charges. So this act was used to indict 120 young people basically for knowing one another, you know, for growing up in the same neighborhood together, and for being part of a population that's vulnerable to a lot of police surveillance and activity. The particular cases that we know are especially sad because it's people who were targeted by the police from a young age for stop and frisk, many of whom have had, you know, low-level charges because of this constant police presence. And those charges, whether they were convicted and served time already on the state level, or even people who face charges and were acquitted of those charges later, those charges, same charges, are being used to prove their guilt or alleged guilt in this, you know, supposed gang activity. So, you know, basically young people who have been under police surveillance for their whole lives, that's now being used as a severe punishment just for their very existence. So it's a really sad situation, especially for people that we know who have had their children. You know, there's some people that we know whose children have, you know, maybe just come back from upstate and then were thrown into federal prison for, you know, what could be anywhere between 3 to 10 years for things they've been acquitted of or already done time.
I understand from a previous interview that I did that at least two of the young men had went on to college and were arrested at college and brought back to New York as part of this RICO conspiracy case.
Yes, that's true. Taken, you know, right out of their college dorms and thrown into prison. So there's really, you know, I think that in some way, the federal agencies and the NYPD really want to tell people that they have, I don't believe this is true, but I think they want to give the impression that there's no chance for freedom.
They are, again, in need of legal assistance. And this upcoming event, can you tell us more about it and what is the proceeds going for?
Absolutely. So the event starts at 6 p.m. It's at 315 Columbia Street in Brooklyn, which is the Jalopy Theater, and they've been so kind to donate their space to us and to the families. And the benefit itself will include a panel with a number of experts on police and policing, as well as family members themselves who have been affected by these raids. There'll be a documentary showing, and there'll be live music as well, and raffles. And the proceeds, all the proceeds go directly to the families who have been affected by the raid. So that money has in the past gone to commissary, both for children of people that we know, but also for friends of their children and friends of them who have no family outside and don't have any other resources for income while they're in prison. It will also go to support any legal needs and fees that do come up in the course of this case. And we're hoping, one of the things that's unfortunately happened in the course of this case is that some of the young men that we know who've been locked up have been, it appears, to be retaliated against because of the reporting that's been done on their case and because of the attempts to bring publicity and notice to the public about the atrocities that happened. And we would like to be able to push forward some kind of case around this retaliation. And at this point, we simply haven't had, and the families haven't had the funds to hire any private lawyers who could really take on a case like this about their treatment in prison.
Event will take place on January the 21st. I have information that says it's at the Jalopy Theater and School of Music, and I think you gave the address, 315 Columbia Street, Brooklyn, New York.
Exactly. Yep, that's exactly right.
Now, for those like myself who are not in the NYC area and we will not be able to attend, is it a way that they can still contribute funds towards the relief of those affected by this tyrannical action?
Absolutely. I'm so glad that you asked. There's a website, bronx120.org. That's bronx120.org. And there's information about the case up there, and there's also a donate button on that page. And all of that money is going directly to one of the family members' accounts, and we divide the money up that way. So there's no intermediary. There's no organization that takes the cut. There's not even any outside organization besides the families that are in control of deciding how the money gets split up. That's all done by the people who are directly affected themselves.
In closing, did you have any final comments for us?
Well, I do just want to say that I'm sure people are aware that yesterday the sentences of Oscar Lopez Rivera and Chelsea Manning, two political prisoners, were commuted, and they're expected to be released in May of this year. And that is a huge victory for all of the organizations and activists who've been struggling around those political prisoners. And I just hope that as we celebrate their imminent release, which is so exciting, we remember to continue to struggle for all those political prisoners who are still incarcerated and all of the political prisoners who might not call themselves that, but who are in fact prisoners of white supremacy and of capitalism. And that we continue to fight as we celebrate.
Cindy, Samantha, thank you for speaking to Black Talk Radio News.
Thank you so much, Scotty, for having us. I really appreciate it.